Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I'm your host, Elijah Carbajal. As a teacher, I know how important it is to stay informed and inspired, and that's one reason why I started this podcast. On the Shut Up and Teach podcast, we have honest conversations and purposeful reflections on all things educational, with the goal of inspiring you to take action in your classroom. Whether you're a new teacher just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, we've got you covered. If it's educational related, we're going to talk about it. So be sure to hit that like and subscribe button so that you can stay updated when new content is released. Now, it's time to shut up and teach.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shut Up and Teach podcast. Thank you once again for joining me in this space for what's going to be a great conversation with not one, but two fantastic educators. On today's episode, my wife, Tracy Taylor, joined me as a guest host as we sat down and had a conversation with Dr. Dave Schmidto. Dave has earned a reputation for being a disruptor of the status quo in education. He's also known as an innovator and a change agent. Dave served as a classroom teacher, a school-based administrator, a central office director, and a professor of educational leadership. And he often uses real-life stories and examples of his own life and career to describe why and how we need to confront the way we've always done it. Dave serves as a leadership coach, a time management consultant, and can also be found helping schools as they navigate assessment data and the madness that is student grading. Dave is the author of 5 books, including Bold Humility and Making Assessment Work. He has earned his doctorate and attended law school. He is the 2014 Administrator of the Year in Michigan and the 2018 College Educator of the Year. His greatest accomplishment, however, is playing the role of dad to 4 incredible kids while living life as Beach Billy on the Gulf Coast of Florida. Tracy and I were super excited to talk to Dave today, and I'm so glad that you were able to join us for this. On this episode, Dave had to answer some pretty tough questions that we threw at him, one of which being, what's your definition of success? For someone with all the accolades that Dave Schmidto has, you might be surprised at his answer. So, without further ado, let's get to the episode now with my wife Tracy and Dr. Dave Schmidto. All right, everybody. Hello. And we got Dr. Dave Schmidto in the house. And we also have Tracy Taylor in the house as well. What's up, everybody?
Hey, hey.
Hello. Shenanigans.
Is that the chicken's name is Hey Hey?
Yes. Okay. It's the chicken from Moana and his name is Hey Hey, but I won't make him scream. He screams. He's screaming chicken. But like, yeah. Hey, hey.
How are you, Dave?
Oh, life is good, man. Life is good.
Dude, I'm glad to hear that. Busy, I'm sure. I mean, we see you all the time just running around, it seems like. And then, you know, you and I have tried, you know, to get this to, you know, get together on this platform here for Shut Up and Teach a couple times. And it's just the busyness of everything. Like at the time, my schedule didn't have the flexibility and, you know, things have changed now and we're able to get you on here. So this is awesome. I'm super happy you're in this space with us. I'm super happy you're here with us too, Tracy. Like, yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. So I'm going to pass the mic to Dave now so that I don't have to shake. I'm going to let him shake a little bit. No, I'm sure he's got this down. So Dave, tell our listeners a little bit about your educational evolution.
How much time do we have? Because
as much time as you want.
Yeah, no,
you're still evolving.
Yeah,
let's talk about that. I guess I'll make it short and sweet. So start off as a classroom teacher. Middle school was my jam. Was the guy that loved hanging out with the kids that everybody else kind of rolled their eyes at. I was the goofy, awkward, stinky kid myself. So hanging out with middle school people was my jam. So I was able to be a middle school teacher for 7-8 years, then transitioned into administration and played that game for another 13-14 years. Went into higher ed, became a professor for a few years, but recognized that I was constantly chasing that next best thing. I was constantly chasing for the door that seemed to swing open for me, and always thinking that my response was to walk through whatever doors were opened. And as a result, made a lot of stupid decisions, personally, professionally, all the things, constantly chasing things. So it wasn't until maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago where I was able to start dialing things back and recognizing that I had a lot to learn about myself before I could start teaching others. So you talk about my educational evolution, and it's still going, man. I used to be that guy that thought my place was with the microphone in front of everybody, making those mic drop moments and walking off the stage, raucous applause, which made me feel good. But I quickly recognized I wasn't really making an impact other than creating goosebumps. So now my cause is to sit next to people as opposed to standing in front of people. I want people to be seated in circles as opposed to rows. I want to be that person that's cheering you on as you chase your dream. And then I'm okay being in the background. So that's kind of where I'm going with life right now. And it feels so much more satisfying to be that champion for others as opposed to chasing my own wants, wishes, dreams, and accolades.
I love it. Always evolving, yeah, right? Yeah. That was Tracy's theme song last year, was Evolution by Joyner Lucas. And that's been something, which is kind of where that question sparked. It was probably around that time I shifted the question to like, introduce yourself to tell us about your educational evolution, because I enjoy learning from what people have to say about how they've evolved over time. Right.
Right.
A podcast the other day, it was like, I made my family third at one point. I had to get my priorities together and make them one. So learning from that, and then learning from you in this, like, we're never done evolving. Right. And like that person, that like self-reflection is just like crucial to our like own personal growth and development.
Right. And I think it's important when you think about evolution is truly survival of the fittest. Right. And I used to just keep adding new pieces onto who I was. You know, think about like evolution of a species. I was adding arms and legs and appendages, trying to be all the things and trying to adapt to whatever the circumstance was, as opposed to truly cutting things off and recognizing that I don't need the tail anymore. I don't need the feathers anymore. I can just be me in the purest form of me as I continue to grow. Part of that is shedding off the stuff that doesn't no longer works or serves me.
Oh my gosh. I needed to be here this morning. I'm like, I am the first Shut Up and Teach listener that just got to hear that. And I needed to hear that, because I'm in that evolution. We're evolving. And so like, I'm trying to find survival of the fittest, and like, I've kind of found like my mountaintop moment, but I think what you said was really interesting, because I'm a chaser. I've been on that chase where you think that the next job, or you think that that next school district, or you think that next opening, or you think that next position is going to be the thing. And you can call it in, you can imagine it, you can bring it in. But then when you get there, you realize, oh, this grass real pretty, but it needs to be mowed too. And then you end up having to drive a honey wagon across that every day. And you're like, I hate this grass. I hate this grass. Right. I hate this grass. And then you get stuck in that next grass. Happiness is not a destination. And then I realized too, that a lot of this, my stuff was following me to new grass.
Right.
And so that self-awareness and self-doubt and that self-intellect has to come into play at some point in your evolution. And so to hear that you're going through it now is really encouraging. So I thank you for sharing that, because I needed to hear that too.
No, absolutely. You know, it's important to recognize. I'll continue on this evolution.
Absolutely. Let's go with this. I love it.
You think about the species around the world. Animals have a home in which they thrive. Kangaroos don't live in America for a reason, right? And polar bears don't live in Florida. Like, everything has found its place to thrive based off of its environment and its culture. And prior to me truly evolving, I thought my place was to maximize my impact of being Dave Schmidt worldwide, right? I wanted to be Mr. Worldwide. I wanted to be that before Pitbull was. And I thought that everybody had to say yes to me. Everybody had to nod their head and agree with me. And if you didn't, it was my job to preach until I broke you down. And now I've recognized that that's not true. You've got to find the place where you can maximize your impact, and find that place where you can be your skills, maximize your skill sets. You know, Lavana Roth, a good friend of mine, I don't know if you know Lavana or not, but Mm-hmm. Lavanna told me a few years ago when I was really diving into this journey, she said, Dave, if like just in the consulting coaching side of thing, you want to make sure that when people think of your name, they think of you associated with a thing, not all things. There are too many people that want to be the jack of all trades. And then nobody knows what to call you for. Nobody knows what to reach out for you for. Find your passion, find your curiosity, find your expertise, and be the Dave Schmidl that focuses on that. And it's been a game changer for me.
You know, I remember, I think it was a tweet or something, maybe a TikTok, I can't remember exactly, social media something, where you shared that too often we're trying to improve, we're spending so much energy trying to improve the things that we lack in, instead of continuing to strengthen and develop the things that we've mastered or that we have a handle on, whatever the case may be. That's kind of what this is kind of pointing me back to.
I remember that tweet, it was on social media, and I saw it either on Twitter or Facebook. I remember it, and it changed my mind. Just seeing it, like you just read it and was like, oh my gosh. And so I immediately did inventory and changed because of that. Like that was powerful.
We do it as adults, right? We spend a lot of time focusing on our weaknesses to bring them up to average, as opposed to taking those things that we're already good at and making them phenomenal and amazing. But we do the same thing with kids. We spend so much time focusing on their deficiencies and who they're not, trying to turn them into what we think they should be, as opposed to tapping into their genius and recognizing that every single kid carries some sort of passion, some sort of curiosity, some sort of piece of excellence that we could be tapping into to make it stellar and amazing. And I think that we've lost our way by trying to focus on the weaknesses and deficiencies of so many people that we go through life with this deficit mindset. It's why we live in a society where all we do is judge, label, and sort people, because we're so fixated on finding their weaknesses and how they're not like us, as opposed to trying to find similarities, passions, and interests.
I love that. That'll preach all day at middle school. I'm a middle school teacher now too. So like,
right?
I get that. That middle school madness, that'll preach all day.
And like now that I've shifted, like I'm no longer out of school, like working as an interventionist, I'm a district coach now, you know, so I get to bounce around from school to school, see different teachers within each school. Sometimes it's whole staff led PD. But one thing I'm noticing here, and one thing I just keep reiterating as I go in, you know, there's some kind of background given about the teacher that I'm coaching, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. But it always comes in this person needs a lot of help. This person it's always that. And so when I go in and I ask and, you know, do my coaching, I find out there's some really great things happening in that classroom. I find out that it's like, wow, your students are really thriving. Like they feel safe and secure in your classroom. Like, You got this down. There's a little bit of fine. Okay. See the thumbs up. Okay, it was you. Okay. Do you have a MacBook or do you have something else?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I need to change the setting on that because maybe mine's just older.
When
I don't know.
Thumb up, it like does it automatically. It like reacts.
Yes, and
what?
If you do like
quotations.
Well, if you do like quotes. Sorry, we're taking a moment.
Sorry, playing shenanigans.
But this happened.
It's a chicken.
But this happened. I say that because it's just funny because that happened. I just interviewed Kim Strobel last week.
Yep.
And her computer did the same thing. She was like talking. She's just like, you know, we do it like that. And like balloons popped up. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, you know,
that's funny.
But you know,
surprise. We'll edit it out.
I'm going to leave it in. Or we'll put it at the end as a blooper reel.
We'll put it in as a blooper.
But you know, it's just like, I think what you're saying is just so poignant about that. Like, we got to start with what is kind of actually working for you, because if that's working, if that's where, like in the classroom, I'm thinking about as a coach here, you've got something going for you and your kids that's working. Let's celebrate that. And maybe even, can we find a way to share that out to people? Like let's empower the teacher, not just to make their own decisions in the classroom, but to like lead and be like lead teachers. Right.
Yeah. Well, can I geek out for a second, if that's okay?
Please do.
Please do.
We can go wherever you want to go, right? But I find it interesting that there's this correlation that we can truly paint between teacher deficits, teachers burnout, teachers leaving the profession in droves. And I will say this, you guys didn't say this, it has zero to do with money, because teachers have been getting paid crap for a long time, right? We're still getting paid crap. So that, I mean, yes, people get they should be getting paid more. So don't misconstrue that. But that's not why people leave, because they step in knowing they're not going to get paid anything. But there's this correlation to the downturn of teaching as a noble profession to this place where we started evaluating teachers, looking at 22 indicators or 54 indicators, depending on which rubric you use, and acting like every single one matters the same. And we go in and we, when we do that, we are determined to find something that they're not doing well. Mm-hmm. Or we look at John Hattie, right? And John Hattie started off, we had 72 indicators of effectiveness. Then it turned into 134 and then 156 and now 172. And we're constantly trying to add to, you have to do all of these things well or you're not good. Which is, it's crap. It's ridiculous.
And how many teachers actually know all 170 of those indicators? You know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
There's only 180 days. Like, they just passed a law in our legislative session that New Mexico is going to have a 180-day school year. I have 180 days. That's one thing for every day. I'm sorry. I'm not going to master something, a new thing every day. There's not.
1,000%.
And I have said it for years. Like, you'll tell me everything that's wrong with me, but you'll ignore the fact that I'm the best thing on this campus. Like, you know what I mean? As an art teacher, off in the back corner, I get ignored. And so when we were, you know, doing things like putting DeFore's model in, or we're running, you know, restorative practice connection circles, they're not going to walk in through my art room. Like, they're going to walk through a different core classroom. They're going to walk through a regular classroom. They'll walk through, they won't walk through my classroom. So there are oftentimes administrators will say, there's not one teacher on my campus doing any of this stuff. And here I am in the back corner and you just haven't seen it. Like, so I feel like what you're saying, I think I've seen it. I feel like it's the truth. And I feel like this is like the thing, like my next thing is, how do we tell more people? How do I deliver the message? If we're the messengers, how do we get this out? Because it's big. Dave, this is nationwide. You know, you've been everywhere.
So well, I've been too many places, right? But you're speaking to a lot of truth here. I spent a lot of my time working with schools and districts, talking on the education side, the student-centered side, about prioritizing standards, right? And kind of, how do you determine the stuff that's the most essential? Mm-hmm. I talk about focusing on the focus. And that stuff resonates with teachers. When you move to the admin side, and first of all,
it works.
I recognize everybody's a middle manager. Everybody's a middle manager. Everybody has somebody that they answer to. Everybody is trying to please somebody, quote unquote, above them while they're trying to serve somebody next to them or below them. So I recognize all of that. But it's we have these competing entities where people feel like they're supposed to cover all the things, that you have to be good at all the things, as opposed to find your focus, whether it's taking the 256 standards and recognizing you only have 180 days. So how do I prioritize and fix those? As a teacher, I can't become a master at 22 indicators, but I can focus on a few things and say, this is me. Back in the 90s, when I became a teacher, I remember we did the True Colors personality inventory, and I was green.
Yeah, I remember that.
Green is like the logical, analytical person. Orange is the fun, active, spontaneous person. Mm-hmm. Yellow is organized and they're list oriented. Mm-hmm. Blue is the emotional person. And it was, we did that to say, who are you? Mm-hmm. But then through the early 2000s, it shifted into, you need to be a chameleon and you need to recognize how to turn into the other colors at the appropriate times, which is BS. Mm-hmm. You know, in the business sector, they recognize, they look at things like StrengthFinder and Gallup and all these personality assessments, not so that you can turn into somebody else, but so that teams can recognize the unique gifts and strengths within themselves.
I agree.
In education, we continue to say, everybody's got to be the same. We've got to make sure that everybody can be good at all the things all the time, and that nobody ever is. And we get frustrated and burnt out because when we're not who you want me to be, I'm going to bounce because all you're trying to do is turn me into you.
Dave, how did they think they're going to turn me into them? Like, were they ever successful in turning you into them? Like, were you a fighter?
Yeah.
Were you like, or were you that teacher that just kind of like went to their room and just kind of let everybody do their thing? Like,
no, I
were you Friday donuts?
I fell for the trap. So some people have heard me say before, when I first moved out of the classroom and became an administrator, I was so focused on creating itty bitty schmitties, smaller versions of myself. So when I would go to teachers' classrooms, my advice to them would be, if I were in your classroom, here's what I would do. Or back in my day, here's what I, in other words, do things the way that I do. And it's these subtle messages of trying to say, do it my way. And I did it because I thought the only reason I'm in this position is because I was so amazing in the classroom and I got this promotion because I'm so good. So just copy my ways. And I know that people do the same thing. And when I moved into consulting, coaching out of the classroom space, I did the same thing. Two of my best friends in the world, two of the people that I look up to more than almost anybody else in the world, Dave Burgess and Rick Warmly. When I first left the classroom space and started coaching and consulting, I wanted to be them. I wore Hawaiian shirts to be like Rick. I did all the gimmicks and had all the jokes and brought all the passion and got the bald head, all the things like Dave Burgess. And I tried my best to mimic them as opposed to realizing, yeah, that's not me. Those aren't my things. How can I carve out my own niche that is focused on Dave Schmidto? And we all fall into that trap. We fall into, I want to be that other person, and, or I want other people to be like me. I've got all the answers. It's not just them doing it.
It's that we have to embrace
it. I did it. And I still do it today.
That's so cool. That is so deep too. I also think too, like we're hardwired as humans to like, especially coming from that art like space, as humans, we're hardwired to add. I'm teaching sculpture right now. So every single one of my kids developmentally who is in art one with sculpture, they want to find something and put it together to make a sculpture. Not one of them started with a thing to carve away. So developmentally, our human brains are hardwired default to add, not to subtract. So in order to learn how to carve and take away and find beauty in behind, you have to flip your mind. You have to be taught that. It's crazy.
I think there's also a sociology aspect where we all want to fit in with all the people all the time. And we're so afraid that if we do something that's counterculture to a group, that that group's not going to like us. They're going to cancel us. So we try to become who everybody wants us to be. And inevitably, we're going to fail at that. So just back down, dial down and say, who are you? And keep going.
And you know, but that's something that I like, typical middle child syndrome, right? The like, I want everybody to be okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's the trap that I need to watch out for myself, of just saying what people want to hear or just like leaving, you know what I mean? Like there's a time to sort of challenge and push back, like in an appropriate way. Like with my coaching, I ask a lot of questions to help the teacher get down to the answer themselves. And, you know, I'm finding some really good success with that. But at the same time, I think asking those questions keeps me from falling into that, like, let me just tell you what I want to hear or what you want to hear sort of thing. Like, let's get to the very bottom of it. You know what I'm saying? And empower, like in empowering other people. Like you talked about, like you were giving goosebumps, but you weren't having an impact, right? It seems like that impact, like the true impact, like of leadership, of coaching, whatever it may be, is when you can see them become empowered to make those decisions, to make the, you know, to start that evolutional journey themselves, right? It's not you telling them what they need to do, but you're sparking the self-reflection like with them at that moment.
Yes. Yes. And yes. You know, it's, I want to make sure that what, anything that I say, people recognize it's through the perspective of Dave Schmidto. So if it comes across as me throwing shade in any way, not necessarily my intention. But I also recognize that we've missed the mark in terms of trying to drive educational change, where we are so focused on perception surveys. Give me the quotes that proved to me that people felt good with all the stuff I said. Give me those things that I can throw it on social media that says, hey, I liked you, which is that's important. But it doesn't mean it's going to translate into something actionable in a classroom. It doesn't mean that it's actually making an impact. Because I can throw smoke and I can blow smoke and tell you that you're absolutely amazing, even if you suck, and it's going to make you feel good, but it's not going to make an impact. On the flip side, because in education, we always go back and forth. It's always one extreme or the other. I can come at you guns a-blazing and just tell you that you suck and that you're horrible and that you're never going to make it. And that's not going to make an impact either. It's finding that sweet spot between garnering trust, which is what we're truly trying to do when we're connecting with people. The reason relationships matter in school and education and any in any learning is so that we can have trust. And trust only works so that we can have actual feedback, which means I can have a conversation with you and I can tell you, here's what's really, really working. And here are some things to possibly consider. And it can come in the form of questions so that you can drive some internal reflection once people feel like they're in a safe enough space to truly talk about where they want to grow and where they want to improve. It can also come in the form of just sometimes you got to call it out. You know, where I'm learning, where I continue to grow is recognizing that sometimes I have to be that coach that just asks all the questions. But for some people, that's a scary place to be because it's hard to say, I don't know. And they simply want you to be that consultant that says, here's something to consider. And trying to figure out when to enter into those two different spaces of coach versus consultant is hard, but that's also how you focus on the individual more than what's safe and easy for you.
Gosh, I feel like I came to school this morning. I'm so glad I got to sit in on this. Like, you have no idea. I needed this. So I'm just grateful. Like, I'm just so grateful. Because again, like, I've been there and I'm there, and like, it's time for me to transition out of the classroom. I'm there to the point that like, I've been there 20 years. So like, it's time to move up and go. But like, I'm trying to sort out some feelings. But hearing what you're saying is like hitting those things that I've been reflecting on. And it's giving me that perspective of like, let me look at this from a different side now. And so I, as the first Shut Up and Teach listener of this podcast, this is definitely going to make some difference for me. That's hey, funny. I think you had another question for today, didn't you?
So it's funny because I was talking about what would I ask Dave Schmidt? Like, what are the things that I want to know from Dave? And there was something that I had kind of prepped, but actually you sparked it. Like, it was like, okay, you're already kind of going into that where you mm-hmm. said something about the case of we failed in the way that we drive education forward. And we've been that, you know,
and the moving, way we drive change
and the way we drive change and all that. So I want to give you a scenario here for a minute. All right. Okay. So with the president of the United States, his entire cabinet behind you and beside you, Dr. Dave Schmidto, you get to address the nation on the state of education and what you mm-hmm. hope for the future of education. What are some of your highlights in that speech?
So first, I'm going to call out the work of Ted Dentersmith. I don't know if you know who he is or not, but Ted Dentersmith, he wrote a book called What School Could Be. He's an amazing change agent. He lives in Virginia. He's phenomenal. So if you don't know Ted Dentersmith, look up Ted Dentersmith's work. But Ted Dentersmith said something to me a few years ago that hit me. And what he said was, we're not going back to the days of pre-standardized testing. We're not going back to the days of pre-accountability. Those days are here. What we can do is make sure that we're measuring and testing the right things. And where we've shifted as a nation since 1983 is we've started chasing things that don't matter, things that truly don't make an impact. You know, for the last 80 years, America has led the world in copyrights and innovations. But yet what we continue to measure is whether or not kids can be standardized, whether or not they're hitting the marks that we see other nations like Taiwan and Vietnam hitting. Like, we're chasing Taiwan and Vietnam for some reason. Why are those the nations that we care about? Why do we care where our kids rank compared to Finland and Sweden, Taiwan, Vietnam? Let's focus on the things that matter to us. Creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship. Those are the things that matter. And those aren't the things that you can measure with standardized ELA, standardized mathematics tests. You measure those things in different ways. So pre-1983, pre-a nation at risk, pre-everybody coming out and recognizing that America wasn't number one like we thought we were in the 80s, we started chasing the score because we had to be number one in something, in everything, even if it wasn't the thing that mattered. And we lost sight of the thing that truly made America this amazing place to grow up and live, which was we are creative, we are curious, we are passionate, we are innovative, we are inventive, and we lost sight of that because we wanted to be number one on a test that doesn't matter. So I would tell the president and the cabinet, let's go back to measuring the stuff that matters. Let's make sure that we are number one in innovation. Let's make sure we are number one in creativity. And as such, we need to focus on collaboration. We need to focus on creativity. We need to focus on communication. We need to focus on those five C's more than the three R's, and let's see what happens.
I love that.
Nice. So give our listeners a rundown of those five C's, three R's really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Reading, five writing, C's. Arithmetic. Reading, writing, arithmetic are the three R's, which is funny that that it's arithmetic, whatever. But you get it.
Right.
And writing even, right? But whatever. That's a whole other thing. But the five C's, we talk about communication, collaboration, creativity. They all fall into the interpersonal skills of making sure that making sure that people are able to be good people with each other, and that they're still curious with each other, that they ask questions, that they're supportive, that they're uplifting. It's all those things that we typically say are soft skills that are really hard. It's all the things that when we go ask corporate America, what do you really need from our kids? And they tell us flat out, we can train them the content of our business, but what we can't train them in is how to be good, effective communicators, workers, collaborators. How about we actually trained our kids to do those things that corporate America, aka the world, wants our kids to be?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I changed the language in my classroom. Because my classroom is a shop and kids would come up and expect me to solve all their problems. Mm-hmm. And it was like being drowned. Like they just will pull you under every single day. Middle school kids are needy, especially after the pandemic. Like they need somebody. Like there's big things. And so literally they just would come up and mob me all day long. And I started changing the language and it was, how are you going to solve this problem? What's three ways you can solve this problem? Okay, I want you to go sit over there and find three ways to solve this problem. Like, and I cannot continue to solve your problems for you. You have to start thinking this way.
And I've seen and I've seen that even at an elementary at an elementary level, where teachers are starting that at a young age, first, second grade of, okay, how can we solve this problem, right? You have this issue. How can you solve this? How can you solve this problem? And well, I think, again, it goes back to empowering the individual. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the reasons PBL, project-based learning, and STEM became such an in-vogue conversation 5, 6, 7 years ago, because it was really focused on, let's become problem solvers. But then people started to feel like, well, this is coming smack against the kids have to have all the answers. And kids, there was this disconnect where kids weren't comfortable being curious, because in every other setting, in every other classroom, they had to have all the answers. Like we say things in classrooms and schools like, we recognize failure is your first attempt in learning. However, if you make a mistake on a test, it's going to impact your grade. Like what?
Forever.
How do we say that
you can make you ineligible for basketball?
Exactly. Like it's
which is the only reason you're coming to school in the first place.
1000%, right? We can't tell kids that we recognize that failure and curiosity are what drive the world, but then hold them accountable and penalize them every time that they do make a mistake and they do have a failure that in that first attempt. Like it makes absolutely no sense the way that we do things. So
It's, it's a double standard, honestly, when you start thinking about it, like, oh, in the world, right? Like, and teachers say it all the time, right? Like, I make mistakes at work and all this. Like, we try to model that, but then in practice.
Yeah, but then call me to the principal's office and watch me fall apart.
Sometimes that doesn't line up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, like, I've been guilty of that myself, too. So, I think, yeah.
I run a STEM program. And I run a very good one. It, I work in a nationally certified magnet school. And that program, that art program, when I took over, it wasn't a magnet program. It wasn't aligned. Mm-hmm. And for 4 years, I've worked to bring that program up to the pillars and the expectation and the standards of that certification. But can I tell you something? When you work as a teacher in STEM or STEAM and you actually start working outside of the confines of their little check boxes, my school has lost their stuffings in the last 4 weeks because I have kids being picked up by buses that they don't know anything about and everything's been organized. I've been absent 8 times in the last 15 days because I've been off campus with student films and like, I mean, making waffles at lunch and ordering 20 burgers from the place because you got to feed kids. Like, and my school is about to lose their stuffings because they're like, Taylor, what is going on? And I'm like, dude, this we're working. This is what we're doing. The system itself can't even sustain a program that is full on STEAM, PBIS, doing everything at its goal. They keep calling me on my days from the thing going, how do we do this? Like, where is this? Where are y'all? And I'm like, y'all are the most incoming people right now. I need you to do your job. Like, I am off campus with kids. Like, please go do your job. I have kids in costume. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are just some schools that if you run full out 100% in what they're calling our best practices, the entire system is not built that way. I am running into 1964, not even just 1983, Dave.
Well, I think, well, you went a lot of places there that I'm going to try my best to keep. I'm going to try my best to keep you employed and not necessarily take the bait. But I will say that in a lot of places, they couch historical practice as best practice, and they are not the same. Just because you've always done it that way, or just because it worked and kept things safe and secure, doesn't necessarily mean it's actually best for kids. Yeah, it might have produced the results you saw in the past, which is great, and it's safe for us as the adults to make sure that all of our boxes are checked and that our kids are in these nice, neat rows, but that does not mean it's best. If you really want to see what's best, again, go back and read all that research that you read the Cliff Notes on, people. Quit looking at the Pinterest posters of what you think the effect sizes are and actually read the scholarship and see what actually works, and I guarantee it's not what's happening in most of your classrooms.
No.
Well, and you know, it's not just teaching content either. So she teaches the habits of mind. Right. Mm-hmm. So she's learning teaching like mind. Learning habits of mind and the engineering design process. One thing that I tried to do, I didn't always do it great, but the last few years of my like classroom experience, I tried to weave in or at least look for one mathematical practice, like one thing. Right. Not just like, yes, we have to learn this standard of, you know, multiplying fractions by a whole number, but like, how are we thinking about that, right? So it's not just like, oh, it's just content. Because I think that happens, like you talking about STEM, project-based learning. I think what happens is it's become so maybe glamorized and like polished and shiny that it's like STEM is a content. It's not thinking practices, right? It's not, we're not thinking like scientists. It's just, here's a science activity and it says STEM on it. So
check
well, box. And my kids have built that bridge so many times, or that tower. It's the tower. Oh, we're going to get together and do the STEM tower. Let's do a STEM tower. Those kids have done that STEM tower challenge so much they can get it down really good. Then you ask them to do it horizontally and build a bridge. They can't do it. My bridges are all this tall. So it is a way of thinking, and you have to walk them through it. But even the teachers don't like, I don't think our teachers are getting some of the training and
I'm
conversations.
Guilty of that.
That's what makes this podcast so important is these are the conversations we need to have.
Yeah.
What you just said leveled me. I'm going to think about it for months now.
Well, I want
until the next time we see you.
for those teachers that aren't part of a STEAM or STEM program or aren't PBL, I would challenge you that we do the same thing. You know, that whole itty bitty schmitty thing that I joke about. Mm. We're all guilty of doing that thing in our classroom. Mathematics, we do the same thing. Instead of teaching mathematical principles, we teach the algorithms. We don't necessarily teach how the math works. We say, follow the script. When we're teaching writing, we say, you have to have a 5-paragraph essay with the introduction and the conclusion and 3 sentences. But when you go out and read an actual book, they don't follow a 5-freaking-sentence paragraph. I mean, we do this with so much stuff in our classrooms. Your name must be in the upper right-hand corner. You must write in blue or black ink. You must, like... You can only use Times New Roman. Like, we come up with all of these stupid rules because it's best for us, or because historically that's what we had to go through, so you must endure it too, as opposed to truly sparking kids' interest and curiosity to say, how do we do this? And again, I'm guilty of this. I do the same thing. I do the same thing at home as a parent. Oh my gosh, I've got 4 kids. My oldest is 18, getting ready to go off and explore the world and do college. And it is so hard to bite my tongue and not to say, here's what I had to do back in my day, son. They don't care. I need to tap into who he wants to be and figure out how I can stand beside him and not preach him. And we have to do the same thing no matter what classroom we're in. The standards, I make a lot of money off of teaching standards-based grading and standards-based instruction. But that doesn't mean standards-based pedagogy. We don't all go in and teach it the same way and have kids think about it the same way. We simply have to get them to recognize that there are principles and practices that they need to put in place and then go explore once you know it.
I love it.
I love it. That's awesome. I'm going to shift the conversation just a little bit here.
Do it.
What's your definition of success?
Good Lord Almighty. today is probably different than it was yesterday.
I told
right?
you, we thought about these questions ahead of time, man. I was like, man, I was purposeful mm-hmm. with this, so I'm glad I'm getting that reaction from you from this.
No, it's so hard.
That was
crass. It's so hard. 10, 15 years ago, I would have talked about awards, getting Teacher of the Year, Administrator of the Year, having the certificates and the diplomas, having the certifications and the degrees, because that makes you feel a certain way and makes you feel like you can tout something to somebody else. Even a couple of years ago, I would have said getting a win, and the win would have been comparative to other people or other systems and saying that I'm doing something better than you. Now, success for me is when other people can shine in whatever it is that they want to shine in, right? My job is not to go out and be a missionary anymore to say, you have to do things my way and you have to believe it my way. My job is to go in, and if you need water, I'm going to give you water. If you need bread, I'll give you bread. Let's figure out what that is. And then if I can help refine it to make sure that you are working on the things that are truly going to make you better, even better. But success has completely changed, and it continues to evolve in my mind. So I don't
and
have
I
a
love
defined
that
answer.
I love that it's different every day.
Yeah.
I love that you could literally wake up and say, okay, if I do this one thing today, then I have been successful.
Yeah. Well,
like,
yes and
I
no.
love that. I love that part of it.
In front of me, on the other side of where I'm looking right now, I've got this giant whiteboard that's got my bucket list where all the things I want to accomplish. And it's also got my 2024 resolutions. And then every week I make goals to try to meet those and to meet those. But that's me, right? For me, I've got a lot of stuff I want to do in terms of how much travel I want to do, how many books I want to read, because that's me. But I know that that's not everybody. And my job isn't to try to create that kind of strategic mindset for everybody, because not everybody cares about that stuff.
I agree. There are people who, like, we write books, we have podcasts. There are people who just aren't into that stuff. And I get that. Like, there are just some people who are like, oh my gosh, you're spending your day talking about that. Like, you're dumb. Yeah. So I get that too. Like, it has to kind of be personal, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. All right, Dave, I've been loving this conversation. Yeah. I'm so thankful that you were able to jump on.
But speaking of personally,
let's play a game.
Okay.
We crafted a game for
I don't know.
You.
I don't know. All right. But let's give it a shot.
It's going to be fun.
This takes me back to the Wednesday Teach Better check-ins that you and Jeff used to do.
Yeah. So you're totally safe with
that. Yeah, no, we're good. Ooh,
we're not going to make you skin a possum or nothing.
That might be more fun, though, actually. Let's see.
Our listeners will judge you based on your answers, though. No, I'm just kidding.
Because they're not curious enough. Be curious, not judgmental. Spend a little time playing darts there, Ted.
I love it. Okay, so let's get into this. So we're going to play... Versus Country Music Edition, right?
Okay.
So two
Let's
artists or albums, whatever you pick. George Strait or Garth Brooks?
Garth Brooks. But I'll say this. George Strait's lyrics and the heart trumps, I probably shouldn't use that word, beats Garth Brooks every day. But Garth Brooks, sing along, scream, shout. You just want to laugh and smile as you're listening. And I'll take that.
Nice.
It's the party. I love it.
There you go.
Reba McEntire or Leanne Womack?
Ooh. Reba's got the staying power. Leanne Womack was legit late 90s, early 2000s. But I'm gonna go with Reba because she's making the comeback. She did the national anthem. She's on The Voice. Like, I got to go with Reba just because she's
the
got the longevity.
the longevity of evolution.
I don't know if it's evolution with all the plastic that she's got in her face, but it's...
Shots fired. No.
Shots fired. Shots fired. We have shots
Reba,
fired.
Reba, if you're listening to this,
Reba,
bring it on.
I'm so sorry. Reba, I'm so sorry. I'll get them later. We can't have evidence on camera. I'll get them later. These boys are out of the fences. I'll get them later. We'll round them up later.
Let's keep this going. It's funny. Tim McGraw or Kenny Chesney?
Oh, dude. So Tim McGraw, yes, but Kenny Chesney is my 1A. I've loved Tim McGraw since I was a junior in high school. And it's this sentimental piece of me is attached to high school. So 30 something years of listening to his music and singing along to every song. I probably have every single song he's ever cut memorized. Like that's, he's my karaoke go-to. But Kenny Chesney, I'm about to fly to North Carolina to go watch him in a stadium tour in a couple of weeks because he's got that beach billy vibe, right? You can hang out on the beach and have a pina colada and still sing along to his songs. And that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. I love it. What?
I think it's funny.
What?
That he wouldn't say both. Because the guy, so we've been watching people play this game on other podcasts and we straight up, so I have only seen one person go both. I have to keep both. We never think both is an answer. We always think we have to pick one or the other. I like that you kind of picked both in a roundabout way.
Sort of. So the greatest concert I've ever been to was where it was Kenny and Tim together, which was phenomenal. But if they're both touring on the same day and I got to choose a concert to go to, I'm going to Tim. So,
there it is. Okay. There it is.
There it is. All right. Two Tim McGraw songs you got to pick from. My next 30 years.
There's the balloons.
You or just live like you were dying.
My next 30 years.
I knew it. Okay. I knew you were dying. I had that pegged.
Live like you were dying turned into almost like what Shake It Off turned into for Taylor Swift, where it's got a good message, but man, it just became so overplayed and
that was on the radio constantly. So. Right. I remember that just being played over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carrie Underwood or Miranda Lambert?
Oh, sorry.
I love it.
Not because of the musical acumen. Yeah. Not because of the musical acumen. Like Miranda writes her own music and does her own thing in her own way, but Carrie Underwood. Yeah, she wins.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. Blake Shelton or Brad Paisley?
I think it's going to come back to the party again. It's got to be Blake Shelton. Brad Paisley, he's fun. He's quirky. He's Peyton Manning's bestie. But Blake Shelton, man, he is just Blake Shelton has just turned into that guy where he doesn't give a rip and he's just going to live his life. And he's gone from Miranda Lambert to Gwen Stefani, like in his own personal evolution of who he is, and he's broken the mold and living his life. So
nice. Brooks and Dunn or Big and Rich?
Oh gosh. Brooks and Dunn, I'll go there. Big and Rich turned a little too political and lost sight of the music.
Okay.
I love it.
Love the response. All right. When You Say Nothing at All by Keith Whitley or by Alison Krauss?
Alison Krauss, yeah. I think you got to go with the original. But my first exposure to it was with Alison Krauss. I had never heard the song until her. And goodness gracious. But I think you got to go with Keith Whitley. It's what made him and it's what made the song. So
nice. All right. 90s country or early 2000s?
90s country. 90s country. It was as redneck as it comes. Yeah, let's go. Watermelon Crawl. Let's go.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes,
I love that.
When we were putting these together, I kept hearing Watermelon Crawl in the back of my head. And the fact that you just said it was like, oh my gosh. Like,
give me some Tracy Byrd, some Neil McCoy. Let's go. Yeah.
Tracy Byrd and Mark Chestnut were my favorites.
There you go.
I had a big crush on Mark Chestnut. Nice.
All right. One more. The Devil Went Down to Georgia, or If You're Gonna Play in Texas. Oh. Both songs about fiddles.
Yeah.
Because we're hokey like that.
Devil Went Down to Georgia, I think that refrain of just like get you. Like that could translate and that could be a hook in almost any genre of music. They could bring that in, right? So,
yeah.
Do you think, this wasn't written, I just have a question. Okay. So who truly won that battle? The devil or the other guy? Who had the better solo?
I say, look, well, I'm just going to say, look around the world today, and I'm going to say the devil won. So.
Goodness. Oh, goodness. We are going to get in so much trouble. This thing going to have a disclaimer on it. And notice, I am the one that's reffing all the shenanigans. But watch, I'm going to get blamed for all these shenanigans.
Nah, I love it.
Y'all boys cutting up.
This is what happens when you get Tracy and Dave with me on the Shut Up and Teach podcast. Yeah. It just becomes a great time.
It becomes a party because Dave likes party country music.
I love it. I know. Three-part question. We're going to wrap up here. What are you listening to? What are you watching? And what are you reading?
Ooh, okay. I'll probably take these out of order, so I apologize. But what I'm watching right now is Full Swing Season 2 on Netflix. It's like the behind the scenes of professional golfers.
Yes.
And it's kind of like my little hook. My wife will watch sports if she knows about their families and their spouses. And that's what this does. So we watch Breakpoint with tennis so she could do the same thing. We watch Quarterback so she could learn about Kirk Cousins and his family. Now I'm doing the same thing with golf. Aww. And that'll hopefully get me out on the golf course a little bit more often. So there you go, guys. Reading. I discovered a guy named Robert Dugoni recently. And he has a book called The World Played Chess, one of the best books I've ever read. Just finished it, so now I'm going back and reading everything that he's ever written. So go look that up, people. It is phenomenal, one of the greatest books ever. And listening to, got a lot of podcasts in queue. I'm still listening to great podcasts. In terms of music, though, I listen to a lot of country music or Tim McGraw. Nonstop. I'm listening to Tim McGraw music. So new stuff, old stuff, doesn't matter.
I love it.
I love it, man. That's awesome. Dude, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
You have no idea. I just love you to death.
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that. You guys are amazing.
Time. It's been so much fun.
Oh, this is good. I love it.
So best way for our listeners to find you, all that stuff.
You got a podcast too, so
shout that out too. And all that stuff, shout it out.
Yeah. If you can figure out how to spell my last name, you'll find me and all the things. So it's S-C-H-M-I-T-T-O-U. But it's at Dave Schmitto on Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook. I don't care. And feel free in your show notes, feel free to drop my phone number in there as well. I would tell people, but most people are driving, right? I don't want them to type while they're driving. So you can text me, call me, whatever, and we can chat anytime.
I love it. Thank you.
I love that Dave just goes, oh, give people my phone number. It's fine. Good gosh, Dave.
Well, I don't have many friends. So this is how you make friends, right?
There are people out there that you don't want to be friends with.
You know, you can block them.
I'm just saying, that's so brave. Y'all clearly don't live like, you know, single girls do in there.
That's
like, don't ever give anybody your address. Don't ever give anybody your phone number. Don't use WhatsApp because it's got a map to y'all. Like, are you no, that's dangerous. I'm trying to protect y'all.
So my phone number's in the show notes. So go ahead.
so Dave's phone number's
so
in the show notes.
Everybody call Dave right now.
We're all going to call Dave. Yes. Yes. And when tempted, I could make those phone calls very fun. This could become a game. I could seriously use that phone number now.
Do your best. Go for it. Challenge accepted.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave, for coming on the show. Thank
Absolutely.
You, Tracy, for being a
for
guest host
and
join us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you on the next show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I hope that you'll check out previous episodes, and I hope that you'll share this with a friend or a colleague. We even wore our hats.
Yeah, I walked out of the house the other day in a.
We got our hats on.
I walked out of the house the other day in a like a suit and a baseball cap and tennis shoes, and I went, "Oh my god, I'm dressed like Dave Schmitto today." So I really was an itty bitty Schmitty, and now I need a T-shirt that says "Itty Bitty Schmitty."
Oh, that's so sad.